When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Yeah, okay.
And I would tell you, man, mothers, when kids are young, train your sons how to cook. Train your daughters how to cook. Train your daughter how to clean. Train your son how to clean. It's not a gender thing no more. It's just the best thing for the family.
Right.
You know, we were just talking about pay raises and payrolls and working. And, you know, back in my day, you were taught to go to school, work from your 20 till your 65, you know, get out, retire. And you really only lived another 10, 15, 20 years to enjoy that.
That's
now great, you can make 100 grand sitting in your house.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure it out. You got to figure out what you're good at. You got to become professional at it and proficient at it, and then you have to go out and get it. And if you can find a woman or a man that possess that same drive, grab hold on that person. You're going to have some rough times, but get through the rough times. Believe me, you come out on the other side smiling, and when you look at where most people are today, especially in the Black and Latino community, a bunch of infighting, a bunch of other things going on, you know, you got to stay tight. Once you've made that decision to your partner, you got to stay true to that.
What it do, y'all? It's your boy Jew from the Daily Wrap-Up Crew, and we got a special show for you. On to the left, far left to me, we got my boy Eli.
Yes, indeed. No book of, but I go by the name of Eli. Still don't got an Instagram yet, man. I am working on it. Trust me, I'm working on it.
Eli, y'all.
But yo, follow us on Daily Wrap-Up Crew, man.
And in the middle, we have Mr. Joe Coelho Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Let everybody know. I want to give you a big shout out after, but I want you to tell people who you are and what you represent.
Yes, yes, Joe Coelho Sr. I do want to say first that the Daily Wrap-Up meant something different when I was young. I won't get into that.
Oh my God,
the Wrap-Up Crew. I like that. Joe Coelho, born and bred in Brooklyn, man. 62 years at this point. Kids, grandkids, went to school all through Brooklyn, did politics, family, community. You know, I'm Brooklyn all day. So that's me.
All right. He's a little humble, so I'm spread some love and tell you about him. He's a community man. He's highly respected, and he gives respect back. He's very humble. I just want to give y'all a point of – I'm probably been my best friend, Jess, is his son. And ever since I've known him, he's been a role model to all the young men and young ladies that I even cross paths with him. Even as an adult, I could sit here and say that I was at one of my lowest moments and I didn't know where to turn, and he was still there even as a grown man. You get what I'm saying? So I highly respect this man, and I appreciate him to the fullest. So, you know,
I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
And since we're talking about fatherhood, I would like to get into, you know, how important do you think fatherhood is, and how vital do you think it is to be in young black boys and girls' lives?
So, great question. You know, fatherhood is a tricky situation because you know, it goes back to our tribal sense, back to Africa. It goes back to our time when the family and the tribes actually were together. And fathers meant a lot more. And yeah, sorry about that, fellas.
Well, yo, we in a community center right now, man. It's a very historic community center, so y'all might see some random audio in the background, but just ignore that. Like, you know what I mean? We're going to be good.
Yeah. No, we're here at the Major Owens Center. Mm-hmm. And that's part of fatherhood, too, because that's been longstanding for us to get a community base in the community where young people could come, especially fatherless young kids. But getting back to the father question, you know, when I was younger, the fathers on the block took care of all of us. If you saw someone doing something wrong, as a young man, you didn't even need to talk to his parents. You handled him the same way you would handle your own child. And we had mad respect for fathers in the neighborhood. They went out every morning. They went out and got what they had to. They did the kill, brought that food home, brought that check home, brought in the existence for the family. And there was a big respect for that. And we've lost that along the way. It's troubling how some of that has come about. You have to go back in history to the 70s. You got to go back to child support situations. You got to go back to schools from the cradle to the grave to the jails. That's really the situation. And you have to unclasp that, right? You have to break that apart and understand the history of it before you talk about fatherhood, because fatherhood is a very strong word. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important what you said about just the community factor, because, you know, on this show, me and Jew, we'll talk about that, the lack of community. Like, you know, Jew always brings up, you know, growing up, we had that sense of community where, you, like you said, you could discipline him or whatever. You could look out for him if you see something going wrong with him. Mm-hmm. So we lost that, unfortunately. And, you know, I think we are slowly getting back to that, or at least I hope so. But when did you see the turn with black fathers? Because obviously we did have, you know, at one point in America, black people were the most married in this country. Like, you know what I mean? And then it, obviously it took a turn. When did you see it take a turn? And do you think that was systematic?
So, yeah, I believe. Well, first of all, let me say this. Let me qualify this a bit. There are still a lot of fathers out here doing real father things. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there's a media push to show the black and Latino father as worthless, to show him as very out of control, to show that he has no emotional control. He does not know how to delay his gratification. He's always physical. He's always creating victims around him. And that narrative, I think, started a little bit towards the early 80s, because up until that point, we were really some outstanding young men coming up. At that time when I was... it was really the early 80s, because at that time, what was called, and you can do your history on it, Reaganomics came into play. Mm-hmm. It was his, Ronald Reagan came in as the president. They started to get rid of all the assistance for schools. So BEOG and Pell Grant started to go away. His wife started with the Say No to Drugs. And so that's where brothers started getting incarcerated for minor offenses, man. When you look at it now, it's minor offenses. Right. And some of them are still there for minor offenses. And so in the 80s is when you started to see that. And then you started to have brothers who were systematically being pulled out of the house because they were no longer in relationships with their children's mothers. And all of a sudden, they found themselves in court. I mean, it's okay to be responsible for your children, and you have to be. You should be. But once the court system gets involved, it drags you through a maze of physical trauma. It's an emotional drama. It's financially draining. And so I think a lot of brothers just did not have the where to. And so they started to basically hide out. They started to leave their jobs and take jobs off the books so that they wouldn't have to pay. And that really started the whole downfall, I think, of the young black male, especially in New York State. I can't speak for other states, but I can speak for New York State because I've been here all this time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened.
I mean, even right now, I think statistically they say that, you know, 70% I know it's a higher percentage of black fathers in the house over any other race or group. So
the most involved.
And making change. So, but do you think, even with that, so do you think that, you know, what is the difference between raising a young boy or a young girl, since you have both a son and a daughter?
So I have a few. I have 8 children. And
I don't hear about the battle Nick Cannon.
Yeah, I know.
The original Nick Cannon.
Me and Nick be exchanging notes. No, I'm just joking. The real difference now, man, is that, you know, when we raised our boys, man, we took them out into the world, man. We took them, you know, skating. We took them to the park. We took them where the physicalness of the young male had to come up from the bottom. When you see the animal kingdom operates the same way. The male lion or the male in the animal kingdom, he takes the young males out with him and teaches them how to fish, teaches them how to hunt, teaches them how to bring back food to the household. We're no longer in that position, unfortunately, and I'm not knocking the mothers who have now been pushed into fatherless homes or just where they're the main giver of the family giver. Mothers are too in love with their sons. There is a time where they should be in their sons' lives. They have to deal with feeding them and making sure that they're well and they understand life at the young stage. But there comes a point in a boy's life where he needs a man, and it might not be his father. It should be an uncle. It should be a grandfather. It should be a cousin. It should be a nephew. But he has to have a male in his life that can be an example. You have to lead by example. He cannot go into the world watching what his mother does all day long, or his grandmother. And unfortunately, that's where our young males are. And if you watch what's happening, when you look at videos or when you look at young men now, they have a certain emotional discord about themselves. Rather than looking rationally at a situation, they'd rather handle it from the emotional standpoint. Mm-hmm. And that can get you into trouble. Mm-hmm. That emotional standpoint gets police involved. It becomes physical, even to themselves. Mm-hmm. It becomes a mental issue. And so that's where mothers, please, mothers, I understand the father might not be there, but find a male in his life that he respects that can put a collar on him and hold him tight and say, young man, here's the road you must take. And unapologetically, that's how I see it.
I think real quick, Jewel, like you said, I think that masculinity is important in a young man's life. And I know, you know, nowadays there seems to be the lack of masculinity in young boys, even to the point where you have men that stepping up into the road and they're using terms like toxic masculinity.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So yes. It's almost like there's a agenda there to suppress masculinity, or at least the traditional masculinity that we're associated with. So, you know, that's why I think fathers are more important, especially, you know, nowadays it seems like fathers are just confined to what they can provide financially.
Financially, mm-hmm. That's right.
Way more aspects about fatherhood that's way more vital to both a young girl and a young boy. So I think we need to stop, you know, and money is obviously important, but sure. We need to just stop making it the end all be all. That's what you're for, here for the money, the paycheck, you know what I mean? So
I agree.
We see what's happening with the young boys, and we also see what's happening with the young girls as well. They're looking for that validation that they didn't get from their father, you know, or they might, because they had a lack of father, now they feel like they don't need a man, or they seen a mother do it without a man, so now they don't know how to respect the man. So there's a whole list of issues that happen when we are not having the fathers in the homes, you know?
Right. I want to touch on the previous issue, you know, and I don't know who should take the heat for this, but at 5 years old, I was in the Scouts. And at 5 years old, I was sent away for the weekend with grown men. I don't know how my mother allowed this to happen, but in 30-degree weather, three-sided homes, out into the wilderness. But I'm going to tell you right now that created the man I am today, because I've been able to go through things and be prepared for things and see things happening before it gets out of hand, so that I can create the opportunities and the advances to make sure that everything goes well. Moving over to the issue that you just mentioned with young ladies, men, date your girls, date your daughters. And I don't mean that in the sense of going out and doing all of this stuff. When I say date them, I mean take them out. Show them what it means to be taken out. Show them what it means to be dressed nice. Show them what it means to have a door open for them. Mm-hmm. When you show them those things, my man Mikey from down the block or Jamal from down the block can't just come over and do anything. I remember years ago, my daughter was sitting in the window at her apartment, and a young man was yelling. He didn't see me. He was yelling her name out the window, yelling. hey, come to the window. And she stuck her hand out that window, and she said, don't you ever call me out that window like that ever again in your life. And then she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I winked, because she was trained not to allow men or young fellas to deal with her that way. And I was very proud of her then. I'm proud of her now. And men have to get involved with their daughters. Their mothers are there to show them how to be a woman, mm-hmm. but a man is there to show them how to deal with a man.
That's well put. I just want to say, like, I think the time has changed from, you know, your era to my era. I feel like, you know, some of the younger generation, we're more fearful, because before we only had to worry about the community maybe peer pressuring your child to do something that they're not supposed to. I mean, the most extreme thing somebody probably would have did was cut school, maybe smoke a little weed.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we got to worry about, you know, social media, having access to more money. These kids got money.
Sure.
I have the money that they have, you get what I'm saying? So it's so easy to do something or be manipulated, let alone they're trafficking kids. It's just so... You said your mom let you go. I think that was normal back then. Yeah. As a kid, I could walk up and down the block till the street lights came on and nobody even looked for me.
That's right.
Because they knew I was all right on that block.
Like, our parents really sent us out with no cell phones.
No, nothing. Right.
Just, we had to be home before the lights, before the street lights
came on. And you could go wherever you wanted to go.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? But now,
dangerous times.
I'm fearful to even have my kids in my backyard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I do think it's like a different thing. And I would say that I'm very fearful of it. I don't know what to do about it. But hopefully, you know, we get some better solutions. And I mean, know our neighbors. That's why I keep saying we have to know our neighbors' names and try to, you know, involve everybody in our community and still try to build a rapport with, you know, people right next to you.
Yeah, I mean, the village is real. When we used to say the village raises children, the village is a real deal. I think, you know, folks have to be careful with the internet. You really have to stay on top of your child with the internet. But the times have changed. My parents and my grandparents, they protected us from the world that we see now. The world was dangerous back then too, but we were not part of that danger. You cannot do that any longer, because the advent of social media means that at the end of the day, you've lost control of your child. From the time your child wakes up in the morning and grabs that phone, you have now taken secondary position. And so you've lost control of anybody contacting them, them contacting the wrong people, being led astray. Automatically they can get the house where the next party is and be there in 5 minutes, where the liquor might be, where this might be. It was a little harder for us to do that. And so we just chose not to. We stayed home on the block, and, you know, but you have to, I think, now involve your kids with what the real world is. You cannot lie to them. You cannot abuse the fact that they shouldn't know what's happening. It will save their lives if you give them the tools to say what's right and wrong and how they should maneuver. Mm-hmm. There's two things I expect from my kids and grandkids. That's greatness and excellence. And you cannot get there if they don't know historically or culturally where that comes from. And so you have to get more into it. If your child is spending 3 hours on their phone, they should be spending 6 hours with you. 3 hours to negate what they just learned, and another 3 hours to learn what they should have been learning. And that's really what it comes to. It's a science, and we have to be more scientific with our children now than just letting the world raise them, because you will, you know, years later, you will look at your child and say, I don't even know who that is. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate.
We just spoke on, you know, being a parent, you know, for your child. Now we're going to flip the aspect around where we talk about young children or young adults taking care of their parents. Do you think it's a limit to how much, you know, a young man or a young lady should be doing for their parents? I see, like, in society now, especially, you know, with black and brown people, we tend to take care or take on a role of caretaker or head of household for our parents. Yeah. Is there a limit or extent where we should or we shouldn't do when it comes to that?
So I will say this to you. Anywhere outside of America, the elders are just the top of the totem pole. They're taken care of until they're no longer here. America seems to think it a little bit differently, but I will say this to you. I'm second generation, born here. My mother was born outside of here. My father, my grandparents were not born in this country. They did not have the wherewithal to gain generational wealth that they would have been able to take care of themselves and pass that down to the family. So unfortunately, as they gotten older, it does rely on us to become caretakers. And it's unfortunate, but if that's just how, to me, that's just how it goes. I took care of my mother until she unfortunately passed. My father as well, my grandmother. I felt an honor. It was an honor for me to do that because they took care of me as a baby and brought me into this world and took me through the processes of getting to be a young adult. So it was an honor. Unfortunately, it doesn't feel that way for young people because they want to be out. They want to be about.
And it feels more like a burden.
It feels more like a burden. It's a financial burden because now it falls on them to find the medicinal side, the hospital side, the assisted living side, the you know, all of that. It's not easy. And so the financial burdens on a young person, say a young mother with two kids who's living with her mother and her mother can no longer help her. And now she has two kids and a mother that she has to help. It's a painful situation. Maybe we shouldn't have children as young as we do. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should wait until we're a little bit more established. That's right. Another angle to look mm-hmm. at. But for me in my era, you will always see folks in my era look at it as an honor to take care of our elders and not a burden.
What you think, E?
I think, you know, with my mom right now, you know, she is staying with her father, my grandfather, and I can see the mental toll that it is taking on her, you know, financially, and just her mental in general, like, because he's an older guy, you know, when you that age, like, your mentality is just, it's not changing, like, that's 90 years of programming, it's not changing, like, you know what I mean? So
shout out to 90 years, though.
Yeah, so, now, shout out to him. So he still sees the world a certain way, and, you know, it takes a toll on her, so even though she loves him, you know, dearly, it does, I get, when she calls me, I can hear it in her voice, like, yo, this is, it's a lot, you know what I mean? It's very stressful. So, you know, I think it should be an honor, but unfortunately, sometimes it can be a burden, we need to know how to, you know, navigate those, you know, that situations, because we do want to take care of our loved ones at the end of the day. Like, I would assume most people want to take care of their loved ones, but at what cost when you got to work, like, 8-hour, 12-hour shifts, like, you know, and then come home and then have to take care. Like, you know, it is a lot. You know?
See, that's where the village comes in, right? Because, I mean, and let's flip it. That's 90 years old. What about someone who has a 20-year-old special needs child? Mm. And you have to deal with that all 20 years or 25 years. I've got a special needs child. Mm-hmm. And if I had to think about it, I probably would have exploded a long time ago. I don't have a choice to think about it.
Right.
But I also have a village around me. I have kids that help out. I have family members that help out. They give me the breaks when I need. I almost don't have to ask. They can sense when, hey, Pops, why don't you go ahead and watch the game? You know, we got this. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But it takes a special kind of person to recognize that within their own family. Who needs help? Mm. Who can I help? How much can I help? And how far can I go? But we should all be in a position. When you look at life as a whole, after you get rid of all the riches and all of the cars and all, it's about family.
Right.
And it's about loving one another and getting to the next level. You know, we all got to get out of here at some point, but it's the quality of life, and you want to make sure that everybody has a certain quality of life as we go through this process year by year by year.
And I think it's a certain level of selfishness that people in this country exhibit more than anywhere else. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody's so materialistic, you know what I mean? They just want to worry about themselves, their own happiness. They don't really put their family or, you know, nobody else's priorities first. It's just, what can I do for myself? How can I make myself happy?
Right.
And, you know, we do need to stick to that village because that's what really held us down, you know, especially in this country, as Black and brown people. Like, that village really got us through these tough times.
I think it's two things that I understand that we weren't privileged enough to have generational wealth. And a lot of us is trying to achieve that goal so we can have it for our grandchildren or children to be. But it's hard for us to have. There's a lot of successful young men and women who have to take on the role of taking on. Let's say we get a decent set of money, right? Now, we have to be responsible not only for our mother, our sisters, our brothers, our cousins. We got to do it for the whole family, which financially, we can't sustain that or afford that. And when you look at that, everybody, oh, you got some money, you think you better than me now, and you don't love us, and you leaving us in here, and you feel obligated to help and support everybody. Hey, man, you was with me, and I can't leave you here, and I can't leave. You be MC Hammer.
Right.
MC Hammer damn near took the whole hood.
Right. 60 people.
Just to make them feel like nobody was left behind.
Yeah.
And when at the, and those are the same people that don't give probably two shits about him. Right. You get what I'm saying? I came from a background where I didn't have neither parent. So my upbringing makes me look at it different. Yes, I wouldn't see my mother be hungry. Yes, I wouldn't want her outside in the cold. But I can't see myself giving her all my money and I got four kids that's going to also have kids. You get what I'm saying? So I don't know. I might be harsh, but my belief is a little different.
So here's what I want to challenge y'all and challenge your audience as well.
Yeah.
If you come to my home, you will see pictures of my great grandmother who I met one time when I was a kid. She passed when she was 100.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmothers, all my aunts, my dad's side. My house is just full of historical, cultural, familial pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You have to challenge yourself to go back into your history and find out who your people were. Mm-hmm. You got to understand where they came from, how they got here. You got to go to the point where you start where your mother and father were children. How were they raised? Because when you start way back then in the 1800s, and you could, hopefully you could figure that out,
mm-hmm.
and you bring it up to 2023, you have a moral imperative. A moral imperative to ensure that you do the right thing for your family that's still here, because 100 years from now, they're going to be looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
Your kids, 100 years, your great-great-grandkids are not going to have you up on the mantle saying, that's my great-grandfather, if you don't start it now.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to understanding history. Too much history has gone by the wayside because mm-hmm. we get into this rat race. Monday through Friday, the weekends, we got to do all of this, and the washing club, we got to do all that. Here come the week back again. Next thing you know, 10 years have gone by. You went from one child to five children, and all of a sudden, life is coming at you. You've got to pull back. You've got to do your DNA search. You've mm-hmm. got to do the historical. You've got to put the time in to do that. Once it's done, it's done. And you pass that to your kids. It's up to them now to keep that going. But you get a different perspective of how your family got here
mm-hmm.
and what it's going to take to keep them here. Mm-hmm. That's just my thought.
Like with you saying that, you know, how many people can trace their lineage back two, three generations? Like, you know what I mean? I can't even name my great.
Sure. Every black person I know got to say to them about, oh, I got some Cherokee Indian in me.
Yeah, that's what they
yeah.
That's the default answer.
And then they take the wig off. Straight yeah, wig comes off.
But still, like you said, we do need those. I remember going to my grandmother's house and just having that photo book and just going through, like, who's this? And then there's a whole story there. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Our photo books is in our phone now. And then it's just like,
right. There's a storybook for everybody. And I'm not saying that going through that history is easy. You got to go find the oldest person in your family, whether they here mentally or not. You mm-hmm. got to sit down with them and say, okay, tell me something. You will be surprised how much they've been holding inside, but they didn't think that y'all cared about it. And so not you guys, but
the
younger family cared about it. We don't do that. The black family back in my day and the Latino family, you never put your elders in no home. They was in the back room. You fed them. You took care of them until they passed. These folks out here, boy, you say the wrong date. What date is it, Ma? Oh, you got the wrong date. Ma got dementia. She got to go to the home. It's a different ballgame. We never did that. Now we're doing that because we think it's okay. That's a little bit of the Western world.
Right.
The Western world has set in a little bit. And I think that's part of the problem. But try it. When you guys get a chance, start to put your little tree together, your little family tree.
Mm-hmm.
See who is out there that's willing to talk. Sometimes you just got to get on the computer. I'm going to Cuba in about another year. I'm going to be down there. My father's people are from Cuba. My mother's folks are from Cuba and Jamaica. And I'm going down there to do a whole historical piece. I've got some history down there that my father told me about years ago, and I have been just not doing the right thing to get down there.
Right.
And I'm going to do that because it's not for me. It's for my great-great-grandchildren who are not here yet.
Right.
That's who I'm doing it for. So that's important.
That's dope.
Definitely. you got to be careful when you're out there. You know what I mean? You're a successful man. They're going to try to make you a passport, bro.
Yeah, no. I got some folks down there. The Quello name rings bell down there.
Everybody tuning in, make sure y'all hit that like button, subscribe, pick up that merch. You know what I'm saying? We need that. You know what I'm saying? Share, repost, like, all that. All right, so my next topic is it's something trending in the media right now where a man spoke on, I guess, going 50-50 with a woman. And I just want to know, do you believe or do you think if a man is going 50-50, he lose value as a man?
Man, let me tell you, man. A household is a household. It's 100%. However way you got to break that up to make it work. 80-20, 60-40, 70-30, even if it's 70-30, the woman's side, whatever makes it work. Unfortunately, it's not something you see when you're younger. It's something you understand as you get older. A lot of us old guys recognize that we've made some fatal mistakes in relationships by being too tricky with the money or not being honest about the money. I know there's a lot of women out there who feel that they should have stayed home all day and been a mom at home or a housewife only, never to work. This is a dual thing, man. You got to have two people in a relationship and carve it up. Maybe 50-50 is just for a month. Maybe then it goes 70-30 and then it goes 80-20, but it's a moving amoeba.
Right.
It's not a steady thing. The minute you think it's 50-50, you already run into, all right, well, I'm not doing 51.
Yeah.
If I do 51, I'm doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes problematic. You got to stay away from that, right? The bottom line is that the role, we have to look at the roles. We have to look at what men do best, right? Men go out and get, they do what they need to do, and they protect the family. I'm not saying women can't do that. They do that to a position as well. But I think, again, it's a moving amoeba, and they both have to figure it out for themselves. You know, every relationship is different. You can't be looking at Married to Medicine or Atlanta Housewives, which I do look at. You can't be looking at that stuff and think, oh, that's how I want to do it. No, that's cameras and that's action and that's a whole lot of different types of money.
Yeah.
You really just have to sit down and have a bond with that woman or that man. You got to bring the checkbook out. You got to look at the bills. You got to not always buy everything for Christmas. Sometimes you got to say, this Christmas we're going to piece it back so that by January, we're not spending January and February money for what we did in December.
Yeah, you be paying that shit back the whole year sometimes.
Some people don't even get out of bills until April to the next year.
Right.
It's unfortunate. We got to stop that. We got to stop being materialistic, you know?
Yeah, I think in Western society, I don't know if people know this, but they saying 100K is the new middle class. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so like, you know, even... And like I said, in New York, 100K, they say is the equivalent of making like $36,000 with the taxes. Like, it's nothing. Like, you know what I mean? So I think people have to adapt. And it's ironic that everybody has adapted in our society, whether it's alternative lifestyles, whether it's, you know, politics. But when it comes to gender roles, that seems to be definitive. That if for some reason, I don't want to change. Like, you know what I mean? So I think it is important for, you know, both people to work nowadays. Like, this economy is not set up to where one person could just outright pay for a family of three or four. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that, you know, your woman got to go out there and kill herself. Like, you get what I'm saying?
Right.
But again, like Pop said, once you have that mindset of just 50-50, everything should be 100-100. My mom's mad and she tells me that all the time. Like, your son is not 50-50, it's 100-100.
It's 100-100.
So, you know, your money... It's her money and her money is your money. Is what y'all putting in collectively to help the family at the end of the day. Like, you know what I mean? So I'm not saying that, you know, because a lot of women will say on the show, oh, why do I have to work and still come home and cook and clean and stuff like that? I don't think that should be a thing. I think the man should be able to contribute to cooking and cleaning. Sure. Like, he might not be the best, but as long as it's edible and it's feeding your family.
I do my thing.
You do his thing. I ain't going to lie.
And I would tell you, man, mothers, when kids are young, train your sons how to cook. Train your daughters how to cook. Train your daughter how to clean. Train your son how to clean. It's not a gender thing no more. It's just the best thing for the family.
Right.
You know, we were just talking about pay raises and payrolls and working. And, you know, back in my day, you were taught to go to school, work from your 20 till your 65 you know, get out, retire, and you really only lived another 10, 15, 20 years to enjoy that.
That's
now
great,
you can make $100,000 sitting in your house.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure it out. You got to figure out what you're good at. You got to become professional at it and proficient at it. And then you have to go out and get it. And if you can find a woman or a man that possess that same drive, grab hold on that person. You're going to have some rough times, but get through the rough times. Believe me, you come out on the other side smiling. And when you look at where most people are today, especially in the Black and Latino community, a bunch of infighting, a bunch of other things going on. You know, you got to stay tight. Once you've made that decision to your partner, you got to stay true to that.
Yeah.
I know this is a fellas talking thing, and I can't just point no fingers, you know what I'm saying, but I do think somewhat of it is, you know, the feminist movement brought this situation, the government manipulated it, enhanced it, put a gaslight, and just lit it up. And now, you know, it's not that I don't want my woman home and, you know, just doing motherly things, but in life and the situation, we can't afford it. You get what I'm saying? Like, honestly, I need her to work. And people look at me like, oh, he's a coward, he's a sucker for even saying that. We don't have generational wealth. We have multiple children. We have a home. We have cars. I can't afford it by myself. I'm gonna be an honest man and tell you, it ain't easy, and I want it to be as light as it could for her. But honestly, until we get to that point, if I could retire her tomorrow, that's what I would do. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? But right now, our goal is to make their life easier,
right,
not have them not going through what we went through. I don't want them looking to eat, oh, what we eating tonight? Oodles and noodles, and that's goals. No, I don't want my kids to go through none of those experiences. So right now, we do have to sacrifice, and then when this time change, then we gonna change our whole look at everything. And I think it changed overall.
And I think, you know, especially with myself, like, you know, seeing you and even Pops, like I'm more motivated. And even Weasel, shout out to Weasel. I see the type of fathers y'all are. Like, you know, what I mean? I see how active y'all are with y'all children, and I want to be that same way. So I want to spend time with my children. I don't want to be working 90 hours a week and I'm barely home. My children can never see me. You know, I want to spend that quality time with them. Like, you get what I'm saying? And that to me is important. You know what I mean? I want to be able to provide, but I also want to be there for my kids. I want to spend time with them. I want to take them to the park. I want to do activities with them. And I'm not going to be doing that if I got to work 90 hours a week. As soon as I get home, it's a high and by. I got to sleep and then I go back to work. Mm-hmm. That's not the lifestyle I want to live. And I know there's a lot of men that's saying the same thing. Right, they want to spend more
time. A lot of men live in regret not having relationships with their children. They say, you know, men get old and they, you know, their children don't even visit them. They don't have, like, a relationship with their children, where mothers would always have a relationship with, because they kind of been in their lives a little bit more. Men are more out working and stuff like that. So, I mean,
I'll give you a key. You know, here's a good saying. If you raise your kids right, you can spoil your grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
But if you spoil your children, you are going to have to raise your grandchildren.
Mm.
And that's real, because at the end of the day,
that's crazy.
At the end of the day, you have to put the time in. You have to raise your children, or you're going to have grandchildren that won't understand what this is about. The other thing I want to touch base on, I'm gonna start throwing down over there. Another thing I want to touch base on is the family structure is key in any scenario, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to have war. You're going to have all types of issues, male relationship. Think about it. It is systematic. It is systemic, because we are the only population of people, Blacks and Latinos, where a Black woman can stand there, and I might be hated for this, but she can stand there and fight and look in her man's face and argue with him. The Chinese woman can't do that. The Indian woman sure can't do that. The white woman can't do that. But our woman could do that. Where did that come from? Right. So you have to think about the systematic side of that, systemic opportunities that this government has used. And you might not even be able to recognize it. But you have to be honest about, is this the woman for me, right? And that's what you have to be. You have to make your choices better as well. You can't just have children with any and anybody, women and men.
Right.
You just can't keep having children with any and anybody, right?
Yeah.
Because those kids manifest from both souls. Mm-hmm. And if you have a rotten situation, you're going to have some rotten babies out here.
Yeah.
So, and we love them, whether they're rotten or not, we love them, but it creates a different society when I have to raise your children, even though they live with you in your house.
Yeah. Real quick, I do love how the feminist movement was all about women being equal to men. So then it's like, damn, okay, y'all want to be equal, like, equally go half on these bills with us. Yeah, like, and it's not, like, nah, that's what men are supposed to do. Men supposed to do that. Like, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's almost like they want to be selectively equal at times. You know what I mean? They want equal pay. They want the equal rights. But then when it comes to, you know, being equal in the household or when it comes to the finances, then it's like, nah, God put you on earth to do that. Like, that's what you, that's what the Bible is saying. Like, so, you know, it is funny how that
works.
You need
grounding, man. The family needs to be grounded. Less social media, more sit down. We used to eat dinner at home on a Sunday night, the family around the table. As soon as social media came around and opening stores on Sunday, the family disintegrated.
Right.
You got to bring that. You got to talk to your kid every day. How was school? How did it go? You got to do homework with them. You got to do the bathing with them. You got to wake them in the morning and hug them. You have to send them out into the world knowing that they have the strength to get through that day.
Right.
That's what has to happen.
Yeah.
Let me get to my next topic. Okay, so with this year making 50th anniversary of hip hop, how has it influenced your life? And what are some thoughts of the genre evolution?
Well, hip hop for me, man, shout out to Hip Hop 50th. You know, I was at the beginning stage of that. That was all early, you know, Run D and Sugar Hill and all them.
You were spinning on the cardboard boxes?
No, I didn't do that. Now, I was looking.
Oh, you were on your B-boy. Okay.
Yeah, I was doing that. But I was B-boy stancing. I had my quarter feel and all of that. I was doing that, buying clothes at Delancey and all of that. It was a great opportunity. I don't feel all of what hip hop has to offer has been realized by the community that started it. I think our rap, we have too many old school rappers that are out there that don't even have health insurance. That has to stop. That has to change. We don't recognize that these folks were the ones we listened to when rap was clean and rap was about honor and it was about duty. And then all of a sudden it started to change. We started seeing West Coast hip hop and some of the other Midwest hip hop coming in. And it was F the Police and Shake That Thing and all of that. And that started to drop. And so the executives, right? The executives for these companies have been putting their families through school and education and everything, big houses and cars, excuse me, through the hip hop world. And our own families have not seen the benefit from that. So I wish we could get back to the native tongues and we can get back to, you know, Pete Rock, CL Smooth and cats like that. And you know, that was my day. And I appreciated the work that them brothers put in.
What about
I
you?
Think I want us to get back to ownership of our music, especially hip hop.
Because to ownership.
Yeah, we need to own. We need to own our music. Like, you know,
your masters.
Like the label. I'm talking about from down to the labels, like down to the masters. Like we need to own that because it's very unfair that we built hip hop to be the number one genre globally, and it's only the white execs that's getting paid.
That's right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I think it's extremely unfair. And even when you think about just music in this country as a whole, like, black people created every genre of music in this country.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
Genre.
Whether it's jazz, blues,
even rock
pop,
and roll, if
rock
you do
and
your
roll,
history.
Like,
that's right.
Every genre of music in this country came from black people. Like, you know what I mean? So hip hop to me is very influential. Obviously, I'm a fan of Kanye, especially Jay Dilla's.
All day.
I loved, you know me, I used to produce beats. So, and I used to sample a lot of music, especially that old music, southern music, soul music.
You was talking about your plug?
Huh? What
your
plug?
Eli, eat your ass on the beat.
Get the fuck out of here. Like, that's not my tag. Like, but I did like how Kanye was looping the samples. Like, you know, that spoke to me. Jay Dilla. Like, these people was like, yo, how they flipped the samples. It spoke to me in a different way. So, obviously, 50 Cent and those people definitely was a big part of my life. I appreciate what hip hop has done as a culture. Like I said, we just need to get back to ownership. Like, we need to get these labels and start doing things our way and not relying on outside forces to come in and profit off of our struggle, our culture, our fight, you know what I mean? So as far as the evolution, real quick, that's what happens when we don't control the music or we don't have ownership of the music is that other people could come in and dictate,
control it,
you know, what is deemed popular. And now we have all this gangster music and now we got these, you know, female rappers talking about this drill music, the sexy thought music, like, you know what I mean? So none of it is being controlled by us. It's being pushed by outside forces. And I think, you know, once we get back to the ownership, you know, we could see maybe a back to more conscious rap, you know what I mean? Yeah. A more productive style of rapping than just this ratchetness that's kind of going
on. What I will say is that, you know, one of the things that was predominantly big in my day, and they said recently that vinyl music has taken over CDs in terms of purchasing.
Right.
And so for me, back in the day, we used to call it digging in the crates. All of the early hip hop music was sampling from jazz music. Miles Davis, Coltrane, some of the Isley stuff, that's where that music comes from. Right. So if you start to do the history, right? History is everything, man. If you go back into the crates and listen to certain music, you will hear everything in hip hop has come out the crates from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah.
And so when you understand where music comes from, then you can go back. But I want to turn this a little bit, right? Just to say, I just saw, what was my man from Andre 3000.
The flute shit?
Right? He just came out with his flute album. But somebody, they sat him down, they said, Andre, what's going on? And shout out to Andre 3000, man. At the end of the day, we all grow. He said he feels foolish rapping now about stuff. It doesn't fit with where he is in his life. So even though I would want to see some of the old stuff come back, maybe that's the end of it. Right. Maybe the new cat's got to come out. Maybe those brothers from the West Coast got to step up more. Kendrick Lamar, Cole, some of these brothers got to step up and say, let's come up with some new stuff. Let's sit down in a vault and let's just sit there for a weekend and come up with a new vibe that nobody can replicate. You know, it has to be some innovation to music. Maybe it's not digging the crates no more, but something has to change. And as long as it changes for the better, I'm down with it. The ratchet stuff, I'm not down with, you know. I saw a video the other day on I watch TikTok every now and then, like everybody. And I saw they were doing a juxtaposition between Chinese young kids at the age of 4 and 5 on their computers in China. And they had this kindergarten teacher with her class, and she's singing music while they're all shaking their stuff. And I'm like, that's what we up against. You're not up against the local Billy or Susan down the block. You're up against the entire universe of people, right? You're up against
one thing about China. They don't like hip hop music. They don't even like the Japanese love hip hop music. Right. China,
you
they
can't
do not
even,
like hip-hop
you
music.
Can't even get on TikTok in China. You're on for 2 hours, and it has to be industry driven or educationally driven. Yeah. But yet, it's theirs.
Yeah,
think about the systematic.
I'm a take this opportunity. We brought up music. I don't know if this episode has dropped yet or is going to drop, so I'm just going to apologize to the women I did go at for coming. Because I do look at it where they should have morals, because I still stand on what I'm saying, but I'm not going to attack their character because we had Lil' Kim's, we had all that stuff was there. And I think the only reason why I went off on like that is because we also had like the Lauryn Hills, the Missy Elliott,
right,
these other Most sounding loves. Of women,
right,
where it wasn't just one narrative pushed
right.
to the front.
That's right.
So, but I do apologize to the Sukianas and the Sexy Red, because at the end of the day, they got to make money for their kids. But in that process, I do hope that they do have respect for the young women that's looking at them. As far as like the men, we always speak about is negative shit, you know. I remember my first album I ever bought was the DMX album, and that shit was violent as fuck. I wouldn't say it, but there was also different sounds. I also listened to Mary J. Blige. I think, you know, parents need to go back to policing what their children are listening to. I know it was like the parent control before you could buy an album. It's so easy and to get access to all this music. Even though they shouldn't be listening to it, we just got to go back to policing what the fuck they listening to, what they're watching. And
do you remember how that parental control came on music? How that happened?
How?
That was Luke.
That
was Luke and them, man. When Luke and them started putting out all that music, and it was just crazy. They came up with that parental advisory sticker, man. So imagine, that's where that came from. Out of
EMP. Yeah.
And that's how they probably felt back then about them. You know what I'm saying? But right now, I think it's so, the narrative is just like, oh, pop your pussy. And I'm just
I think that is true, but I think the issue now is that it's become so mainstream. You know what I mean? Back in the day, you know, I remember there was a Missy Elliott song and it was very vulgar. Now that I got older, it was a vulgar song, but it was edited in a way where it was an innuendo. It was just like, you had to be an adult to understand what she was saying. Nowadays, mind you, I didn't really listen to hip hop until I was like 12, 13. I was a young teenager. Like, kids are listening to this drill music at like 4 or 5, like, you know what I mean?
They and they know what it means. Like, shot an eye, pop, whatever. So
it's different. At that time, I was a young teenager. I was a little bit more, you know, even though I did listen to 50, I never wanted to go out, like, you know what I mean, and shoot somebody or feel like I had to wear a bulletproof vest. Like, it was just music at the end of the day. But I was much more, I was a little bit older and I was able to differentiate. Nowadays, these kids are, that's their Bible. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's drill music, Lil Durk, all this other Chicago music. Yeah. That's what they grow up on. They don't know nothing else. So, you need
balance. And then you have to know who is selling it and who's pushing it. I'm sure that there's a lot of rappers that are clean and music folks that are clean, that are taking their music up to the record labels, and they're saying, hey, and the record labels, nah, I can't make money off of that. And so we got to figure out how to promote ourselves. We got to distribute ourselves so that we can get the clean music back out there. And that's just what it's going to take, man. Yeah. And then we got to look at the fact that at the end of the day, people like Sukiyana and the rest of them, they're going to get older. There's going to be, I believe, some regrets on how they have gotten some of that money. Some of their children will come back and they will feel the negativity coming out of that. But you can't stop
people. But the damage is already done by that money.
Right. Yeah, the damage is done by
the whole generation. Like, right. The damage is already done.
That's right. That's right. That's right. I agree.
This is my last topic. Currently, I guess, like, the NBA is under fire because of the Josh Giddey situation, where he's getting accused for allegedly for, like, talk to a younger woman. But outside of that, we know that Malika Andrews, Stephen A. Smith, two black people. I think Malika Andrews is biracial. They speak very directly when, you know, certain situations. I remember Stephen speaking about Kyrie. He was very harsh on Kyrie. But when I think Brett Favre did the situation where he was stealing the money. And he was a little lax on it.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers.
A lot about not taking the vaccine.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of light on that. Malika Andrews, I believe his name was Brandon Miller, who was about to go to jail for 25 years. She said it on his draft day. Yeah. A lot of situations where black men, what's the guy, the Rockets coach?
Udoka.
Yeah. He went through a situation. She was about to go at Stephen A. Smith about the same.
Yeah.
They're very boisterous when it comes to, you know, and I don't want to make it a black and white thing, but it seems to be a black and white thing.
Okay. It
seems like a black and white thing.
Yeah.
How do we approach that? What do we think about that? And let's talk about it.
I think with a part of me wants to give Malika Andrews the benefit of the doubt and say she is just she's a puppet. You know what I mean? And I think that she is in place to, you know, criticize black men, where obviously the white man can't do it on national television, because then it looks a certain way. So let's put Malika Andrews in here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she's a black woman, so nobody's going to say nothing if she goes harder towards black men or whatever, the black athletes. So, you know, nobody's going to bat an eye.
Wasn't she married to?
They say she's married to a Jewish man or something. Oh, like that, right?
I thought she was married to my man, that Fab Five cat. What's his name?
Oh, no, Jalen Rose. He's married to.
Was the other child? Right.
Molly.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. I had a different
name. I think, like I said, I'm just giving her the benefit of the doubt because she's a black woman. And I hope that she's just not that, like, malicious towards black men. But I think she is a public figure. Just like at times, I think Stephen A. can be a public figure, like, because he was going extremely too hard in some situations against black athletes, that I haven't seen him have that same energy for, you know, the white athletes when they get into similar situations. You know what I mean? So, Stephen has been vocal about, you know, that he could have lightened up on certain situations. But I do think it is unfair the lack of attention Josh Giddey is receiving. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't hear nobody talking about him unless we're pointing out the fact, like, why isn't he getting the same coverage? Like, you know what I mean? Because I guarantee you if that was somebody else, a black athlete, they'd be talking about this motherfucker for like a week straight. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
I will tell you this. You guys are nice. Mm-hmm. Right? You guys are being very nice here, which is okay. I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm a little older. And I gotta put it where I think it should be.
Okay.
You use the term puppet. I don't use the term puppet, and my crew don't use the term puppet. Mm-hmm. The term we use for Stephen A. and about another 10 others, and we use the word coon. That coonism is something that you have to identify, you have to recognize, you have to call it out wherever it is, and you have to then put facts on the table. Mm-hmm. The minute you put facts on the table, the coons are gone. But if you allow them to have the microphone, and there's a few of them, I can name 10 of them, I'm not gonna do that, but I could name many of them, but Stephen A. Smith is in the top three, right? And at the end of the day, someone who doesn't have any skill level playing basketball or football, making more money than anybody else out there, is being paid to do this job, then that's what he is. He's coon. He's doing the job to make his money, and that's the end of that, right? That's how I see it. Puppet is a good word. I go with coon. I'm an older guy. We go with that word. Yeah.
I would say that I'm usually highly entertained by Stephen A. Smith. I think he's a funny dude. I the disconnect where he makes it seem like he cares so much about what's going on in the black community, and then what I'm hearing when the shoe is on the other foot, not having the same energy, brings a dislike for him. And I hate to say I feel this way, but you know, the whole Aaron Rodgers, he always say, oh, I could give y'all example, or I know this person. But when is a black man, did to Kyrie was outrageous.
I turned in like, yeah, he going to eat Aaron Rodgers up. And he was, you know, Aaron, that's my boy, man. I'm like, well, you did not have that same energy. Like, where was the energy? I was waiting to see if he was going to have that same energy, keep it the same, because then I couldn't say anything. I'm like, okay, Stephen A. is being fair, like, but he didn't. And that made me really look at Stephen A. like, okay, I see what
you're saying. And I believe sometimes we shouldn't be fair, because they're not fair with us. You know what I mean? And when it comes to coverage, there's no benefit of the doubt. There's no accusation, allegedly. You know, what happened to, you know, a lot of these guys, they get in bad situations, and where other people can just sweep stuff under the rug. I'm pretty sure there's other ballers and I'm not defending the wrong stuff that's being done. I'm just saying how it is being reported. So, I mean, we just got to be more aware. And if we got to be that part of the media, I'm willing to take that on. But we got to be fair.
Yeah.
And we got to defend our black brothers when, you know, everything is not what it seems. Edoka situation was crazy. He was wrong. But
he's not the first coach to do that. There's plenty of coaches that have been in that.
He's the only one being humiliated in the situation. You know what I mean? But
brothers got to learn to get in front of their problems, man.
Yeah.
You can't hide all this stuff, man. It's better you just deal with it, get it over with, and try to put whatever, you know, whatever opportunities and options that you can do to make it a better situation. You just can't wait till the media gets it, because you've lost full control. Deion Sanders, coon number two. Thank you. you know, you lose control of the narrative when you let that be the first person to tell your truth. You can't. It's moving too fast for you to get ahead of it, and so you lose it. So, you know, Adeko, he's a great dude, a good coach, good family structure, but he did the wrong thing. He should have fixed that before it got there. And so, and at the end of the day, even once you do wrong, there's still an accountability. You should still be able to come back from that. That shouldn't end your career or end your life. You know, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Other folks get 10 times to do the same crazy shit over and over and over again. We're about to look at this crazy man getting a second shot at being president. If a brother did 1/100th of what he had done in that time span, wouldn't even get a chance to even get to the polls. So, you know, but we have to know who we are.
Let alone live.
Yeah, we are not them. Yeah. And we got to stop thinking that we are them. We can't do what they do and be shining. On this side, it's never going
to
work.
It's tough, you know, it's tough being a black man, because you have to work twice as hard. You have to damn near be perfect. And when you have white media out to paint you, you know, as this monster, And then you look around at your black, you know, reporters or journalists, and they're doing the same thing. Now you got two machines working against you, and it's like, damn, I damn near have to be perfect. And this is why you can say whatever you want about LeBron James, but for him to be in the league for 21 years and not have a blemish on his record is extremely commendable and is very rare, honestly.
I could take a second to play devil's advocate with the Barack approach, you know, they say sometimes he couldn't do much because he was black. Mm. So to still have a black person in that field,
I got something for that. They always say that. Shout out to Barack and Michelle.
You know somebody. You know he got something to say when he give you a shout out personally.
Because they always say that, you know, well, just be happy you have me at this position, and I'm making it better for the next black person, right? Mm. And you would rather me here than no one here. So this is the sacrifice we have to take.
Let me know when I can step in.
You can step in right now.
So Barack is my man. I love the fact he did what he had to do, but it wasn't because he was black, right? People forget that Barack had white sensibilities. His mother was white. His grandparents that he was raised with was white. There was no way that he was going to do what he needed to do for black people because he kept trying to make sure that it was all inclusive. So we would never have gotten from Barack what we thought we were going to get. He was in office 8 years. The one thing we asked him to do is put one blackity black thing in, and everybody else got taken care of, right? The Chinese, the Indian, the LGBTQ. Not knocking them, shout out to all of them. But we never got anything that we should have just on our level. When he said things like, all boats rise, we're not in the boat, brother. Mm-hmm. You know, we in the tire.
Yeah.
You know, we're on the sheet. We're not in the boat.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, that's where the problem comes in. I love Barack, and I wish we can get more. He should not be the last attempt at this. But right. We have to be very clear on what has happened and the position we're in now.
What you're saying that though, he did have a black wife. You wouldn't think that would change his perspective on the necessity of doing something for us?
I think black women gained a lot more out of Michelle than black men gained out of Obama. Because Michelle showed that she could play the role of a wife but still be a positive example as a woman that was willing to go out there and do what she had to do. We hadn't seen a presidential wife do that back until you go to Jimmy Carter, Jimmy Carter's wife. And she just passed, you know, God bless her. But at the end of the day, Michelle was a very strong black woman who kept him in check too. Who knows what Barack would have been up to? I don't know, that's my man and everything. But at the end of the day, as a family unit, and don't forget, when I was just talking earlier about the village and the griots, you remember when they first came into office, her mother was there. Her mother was there 24/7, right behind them at all times, all the pictures. Her mom's was there, showed that they had a village around them and the daughters were going to be raised by it. It wasn't just going to be dad all the way out doing presidential thing and mom doing gymnastics. No, they had someone at home rocking. And the daughters, I think, have done well up till now.
Yeah.
So I love Barack Obama. I'm not against him, but I think we need to create more of him so that we could keep going, right?
Definitely.
Can't be the end all. And I think
tomorrow means a lot to me because, you know, we got the Black Man's Brunch.
Yeah.
And
shout out to Black Man's Brunch. Mm-hmm. 500 men making a difference.
That's a fact. And there's a lot of questions I want to ask specifically when it comes to voting. You know what I mean? Because I'm tired of every year we vote and we're saying the same things, man. They looked out for everybody else except for black. I'm tired of that narrative. You know what I mean? And I really want to have some meaningful conversations about what we can really do to justify our votes. You know what I mean? It can't just be like Joe Biden said, well, vote for me because if you don't, you're not black. Like that's not even a reason. Like, you know what I'm saying? We need some tangible results because there's no reason other communities should be getting priority or even laws passed, executive law orders, like, you know, is outrageous. You know what I mean? And we never get anything for our vote, but every year we continue, every 4 years we continue to be like, oh, your ancestors died for you to vote. No, they died for us to make a change with our vote, like, not just to be able to just vote, like, you know what I mean? So I would like to sit down and have more meaningful conversations about that.
So where I would be with that, man, I'm gonna tell you honestly, again, it goes back to history. If you don't know your history, and you don't understand the culture of voting and you don't understand politics, how can you come to the table? The deal right now is that each community has to come together as a community group. They understand as a community what they specifically need, and they make it a plan, and they say, here's our master plan for this community. And they look at all the candidates and they say, this is our plan. We don't care what your plan is. We're not voting for you. We're bringing you in to follow our plan that we put together. And until Black folks put that plan, that master plan together, community by community, I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, man. Yeah. Flatbush needs something different than Crown Heights. Fort Greene needs something different than Brownsville. East New York needs something different than. So those communities got to come together. We just can't be a monolithic group voting Democratic all the time. But it takes time to understand that.
Right.
Right. You just can't get your voting card at 18. Yeah. There's two things they let us do in this country without any information or any sort of idea as to what it means. One is vote, and the other is to go to war. We do those two things without ever understanding what those two things mean to us, right?
Yeah, and I like the approach that Cube had, where he, you know, he had something in writing that he wanted Biden to sign.
That's
like
right.
and it held, and it was good because it was able to hold him accountable if he didn't do those things.
Right.
It was like, hey, you signed this, you didn't do it. Like, you got him. There's some ramifications. Maybe even some legal actions you could probably take. But, you know, people looked at Cube like he was crazy for even doing that. And I thought that was a smart idea, but, you know.
I will say to you guys that you have a platform. Your platform might be everyday socioeconomic deals, but it all flies into the capacity of community building. I mean, you're trying to build up the minds of people, the same people that got to go home every night. I think at some point your platform can be used positively for that, and we should get a voting drive going and give folks an opportunity to sit in a room and say what is really happening in their lives. Where do they really need the help? This event tomorrow, the Black Man's Brunch, we do this every year, five times a year, under the 500 Men banner. And we'll have a room of young Black brothers that will be in here, Latino brothers. There'll be a few sisters here as well. And we're going to get to the topics that are now topics that will have nothing to do with crime, victimization, anything of that nature. It'll all be positivity. And if you can get out here, please do so. And if you can't get to this one, get to the next one. These brothers are now down with it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Like, man.
And again, appreciate y'all for tuning in. Everybody, Pops, you got any socials? You want social media? You want to?
Just Major Owens Health and Wellness Facility. When you get a chance, JC Energy, and just the Coelho family. We, you know, I'm social media for them.
Yeah.
Type it in on Facebook, it'll pop up.
Type it in.
Yo, we appreciate y'all for tuning in, man. Make sure y'all cop the merch.
Appreciate y'all.
Grab a crew.co.